Tommy. It finally happened. I guess if you complain loud enough, going the Costanza route, that Tack McKinley finally got his wish. He complained when he didn't get traded, and now he got released, the former first rounder, in his fourth season with the Falcons when he was the 26th pick out of UCLA. And now he will be on waivers, free to anybody to pick him up.
Yeah, now the question remains, will Tack McKinley pull a Costanza and sit at Jerry's coffee table and try to lament and figure out what he's actually good at and have his friend help him out that way? Time will tell. But, geez, talk about, you know, biting the hand that feeds, Gregor. That's the punishment you get for spouting off publicly. It's one thing to do it in the media, and it's one thing to play that game with the media and have that back and forth with management and the organization. It's another thing in our social media world that we live in now to just flat out go out and call your organization a bunch of clowns using the clown emoji, and also put out there the types of trades that you believe you were involved with potentially, and expect to be back with the team and embrace with open arms. Obviously, a ridiculous play by Tack McKinley. And here we are a week later, and there were consequences. His job is no longer guaranteed. And you know, here's the kicker, too. And I know it's easy for us that you know, work normal, everyday jobs to look at athletes and the amount of money they make. But his option, which wasn't picked up for next year, was worth $10.1 million, Greggs. That's a lot of scratch.
Yeah. But, hey, that's in the NFL, it's like it's chump change. No, I'm kidding. But it's a lot of cake. And, hey, the guy can play. Somebody will pick him up. And you know what, though? He's not going to get that contract. That's the thing. He's going to be taking a hit, no question about it. And that's just how it goes. Tommy, a few other things are going on. The New York Jets, if they don't, I can understand the point not to, here's, no, actually I don't. You can fire Adam Gase because your team has shown all year long no ability to improve at crucial times of the game. Now, they might have lost that game anyway because they're just not that good. But how they handled the last 2 minutes of the game to give New England the ball back, allow them to kick the winning field goal, like, that's just inexcusable. Like, that's just bad clock management. There's lots of bad decisions made by that team all year long. And, like, Adam Gase, all you have to do is look at what the Dolphins are doing now that he's gone and what the Jets are doing now that he's there. Like, he should be done. And he's not coming back next year for sure.
No.
But I don't even understand the reason, you know, unless you're guaranteeing you want to finish last to get the first pick, because Jacksonville only has one more win, you could fire the coach. I'm not even sure the Jets have enough talent to win more than one game anyway. But the coach, you know, the only reason you're keeping Gase is to ensure that you finish last. And that's a pretty bad loser mentality.
First of all, that was, you know, not a great Monday nighter, although it went down to the wire. Good to see Sergio Castillo making his field goals and extra point conversions happen. Always good to see an ex-CFLer succeed. But I look at that Jets team and I go, this is a mess. And to the point where there's talk about Trevor Lawrence opting to stay at Clemson next year so he doesn't go to the Jets, or refusing to potentially go to the Jets as well. Like, that's how messed up that organization is. And when we're talking about it in week 9, and some of these stories have already bubbled up in week 6, 7, and 8 leading up to this week and the performance that we witnessed last night, I look at that and go, oh my God, like, what is going on to the point where there's a guy that could be a franchise player already looking at that organization and potentially saying, no, I'm not even going to bother. If I can control my fate to any extent, I'm not even going to look at that organization. Like, that, the legwork and heavy lifting that's going to need to be done with the Jets, Greggs, to convince whoever they end up with, potentially first overall, is massive and immense. And I just look at them and go, boy, oh boy, that's painful enough. I know we give Strutty a hard time with the Giants, but poor Mark Mugeot sticking with those Jets. And I think Josh Klaassen, too, is a big Jets guy. It's a huge mess, and I know we've seen messes firsthand covering some of the teams that we've covered here in town, but boy, oh boy, it's just on a whole new level with the New York Jets.
Oh, it is. It's bad. Like, they are a really, really bad football team. Just not good.
Yeah.
not a great day. You talk about social media, but man, the minor leagues of baseball now. It's going to get pretty ugly for many minor league teams. Like, I've been reading baseball people. You know, it's going down from 160 to 120 teams. That's at least 40 teams, and possibly more are going to be left out in the cold. There is the Yankees announced they're ditching their affiliates in Staten Island, Trenton, Charleston, and Pulaski. And they basically did it on social media. They didn't even tell them.
Yeah, right after the election was called by all the media outlets on Saturday, and that's the salt in the wound. And these owners of the minor league teams are finding out about it via social media. No discussion with the Yankees themselves. A couple of owners have come out and said that, you know, they've tried to have an active dialogue with the Yankees to pursue a continued relationship. And this is after, you know, convincing their cities to put money into ballparks, and you know what kind of entanglement that situation always comes with. We've witnessed it with stadiums being built here in recent years, and it's like that everywhere. It's not just the major league stadiums and clubs that are going through it. It's minor league teams too, And this is just an ugly example of probably what's to come in minor league baseball. And here's the thing that I look at the whole picture of minor league baseball, and it's tied to the majors. There's so much money in baseball in general, specifically at the top with the major leagues. And that's generally how it is in all sports. We get that, right? But the fact that some of these players in A, high A, double A, triple A are barely scraping by. You know, we've talked about stories of players that make like $7,000 a season and they're living with four other guys in a two-bedroom apartment. It's unbelievable that the parent organizations of these franchises are not looking after their prospects and their organizations. It's disappointing. And I think it's revealing to the general public and making it known that it's not all rosy when you get drafted by a ball team and you're a prospect in their system. These guys are slugging through crappy conditions and they're not making a ton of money. And you know, in a way, it keeps them hungry to make it to the next level. But how many of them actually do find their way to AAA ball where they're making good money as seasoned vets in the AAA system, and then getting their way to the majors? Like, it's awful, and this is another example of it. And I'm sorry to say, we're probably going to see more stories like this. And you know, anytime it's the Yankees, because it is, you know, the team in baseball, one of them. It gets this type of attention, but man, oh man, I fear for what's to come, and there's going to be tons of people losing jobs and stuff like that. It's an ugly situation.
Tom Cazzola joins us on Edmonton Sports Leader TSN 1260. Tommy, Gary Bettman came out, and it was a virtual panel discussion about the Play International Council Summit, saying, quote, you'll play for 10 to 12 days. You'll play a bunch of games without traveling. You'll go back home for a week, be with your family. We'll have testing protocols and other things you need. It won't be quite as effective as a bubble, but if they go this road, it minimizes the risk to extend practical and sensible things. So it's something where we could see, you know, teams like, you know, in Canada, for instance, they all go into, let's say one time it's Toronto, and you stay there for 12 days and you play, I don't know, six games, and then you come home for a week, right? Then you go back, and away you go. And so I don't know if it's always going to be in one location or if they'll switch it for every different one, but, you know, it's kind of like a quasi hub or a quasi bubble, but it's only for short periods of time.
Yeah, some kind of controlled or somewhat controlled environment to limit exposure and risk and stuff like that. That if that's how they want to go about it, good. If they think it's feasible and it can work, Grigor, then that's fine with me because it gets everything going again. The other thing, too, is, you know, they can start that way. And if things do start to improve in terms of infections going down, the vaccine news that we keep hearing about, and especially what we heard yesterday, if that comes into effect, which sounds like it should around that time, you can always change on the fly, or the NHL can start with these sets in one city, and then you go back for a week, and then, you know, midway through the season, you can have a restart, and you can go about it in a more traditional format. And the thing here that I like is that it's an indication that the league is thinking these things through and is putting these plans into action, or at least they intend to, and it's an indication. If Gary Bettman's come out and saying stuff like that publicly in interviews and on forums and in those types of settings, then that's kind of more of a hint that there is indeed something in the works. They're not sitting on their hands, and they're trying to make this 2020-21 season come to fruition and get as many games out of it as they can. So, where we're talking about negative things in the first half of the Chronicles, here's a bit of a positive, and hopefully that trend continues.
And the interesting thing is when you look at, Bettman, kind of the first time he talked about, you know, realigning again on a temporary basis, that's exact quote, for him to deal with the travel issues. Like, I just think, you know, every day that moves forward, an all-Canadian division, I'm going to say it's all, but, like, I know nothing's guaranteed, but, man, I'd say it's 90% right now we're going to see a Canadian division.
And that's cool. I like it. The Oilers in the same division as the Maple Leafs and Habs. Very neat. Who would have thought that it would come to fruition? But this crazy circumstance dictates it, and I'm all for it. Even if it's for a part of the season, just to see it. I know it's different. I think it's cool. I'd welcome it. And stuff like this, we're being thrown curveballs left, right, and center, especially in these last 9 months. And this is one where I'm like, well, this is a neat result out of a bad situation. So I'm all for it, and I think that would be real. How do you galvanize Canada? Put all the teams in one division and see how it goes. I think that would be fantastic. So if it does come to fruition, bring it on, baby.
Oh, I can't wait. I think it would be awesome. Tommy, we will chat with you tomorrow. Have yourself a great day, and enjoy the snow.
Take care, Greg. I'll try.